It's not good. It creates this evil inside you. It doesn't create good politics. It doesn't create a good government. Sure, it's good for you in the short term, but man, it destroys us all in the long term. Kind of continue along what you're saying. It's one show that does a really good job showing how easy it is to become a bad guy is Breaking Bad. That show starts out with just a high school chemistry teacher who is struggling for money, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna use my chemistry knowledge. I'm gonna cook some crystal meth. I'm gonna sell it. I'm gonna get myself out of this for my family. That's the end of it. And he ends up being this cold-hearted kingpin who cares not for any lives. And it's you're just watching his slow decline to hell. Watch him become the devil. And it's that is a great show for showing that. There's a reason it's so highly rated, and it's because it's real. It's you can viscerally feel it, but you can see this is how easy it is to become bad.
Right.
You talk about Breaking Bad, which I have seen and which I like a lot, about how a good guy become a bad guy. You know, I don't even remember in the beginning of The Godfather, Michael's character, Al Pacino was Michael Corleone in the movie, and he said, that's my family. He was talking to his girlfriend at the time. He said, that's my family. That's not me, right? He was not a part of them, but yet by the end of that movie, Michael was just as bad as everybody else you could think about. So you talk about people going bad and how easy it is. Michael went bad because of the love of his father, apparently, and he just went into straight decline. Yet he became this evil person by the end of the movie. And, you know, human behavior is such a strange thing. You're absolutely right. It was apparently The Godfather was the first real Breaking Bad, I think.
It's funny, you know, once you start fudging on your principles, then there's no end to where you can go, you know, whether it's 2 weeks to stop the spread or, you know, where I first noticed this in a lot of people, they bring up Trump and they say, okay, oh my gosh, you know, that things have changed in politics. But I noticed this just a little bit before Trump, where people on the left were essentially giving up on free speech. They were literally saying I don't know if you guys remember the phrase punch a Nazi and all these other things, but they just started equating speech with violence. And, you know, my origin is I sort of came from the right, and I sort of eventually sort of moved more toward liberty. So I guess I moved more toward the left, but that was these were some of the principles I enjoyed about the left, is this idea of freedom of speech. These guys used to be defenders of this stuff. And now suddenly I could see it. I mean, I used to be in a skeptics group, and they're kind of tied similar thinking to guys like Sam Harris. So, you know, they're, you know, big on these guys. And I remember seeing these guys, I was having to argue with them about, you know, the absoluteness of free speech, and they all had exceptions to it. And they could say, hey, you know what? It's okay to punch somebody in this situation. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And that preceded Trump, you know, and I think that's how Trump is really a symptom of where all that stuff came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A book that comes to mind is Ordinary Men by Professor Christopher Browning. Have you guys read that book?
No.
I highly recommend it. It's basically a treatise on how, or, using
an examination of
using historical historical evidence or historical whatever, you know, to show what it takes to bring somebody from just a regular happy-go-lucky family man to a mass murderer,
an absolute cold-blooded literal Nazi who's killing women and children in the street.
Right. Yeah. And so they talk about the police battalion, the reserve police battalions. They're not even regular police officers. They're people who didn't even get to go on military leave and all these different or military service, and they were reserve policemen, and they were mostly people in their 30s and 40s.
Yep.
And they were people,
military men at all.
Yep. Who had families and things like that. And then they were the ones who ended up doing most of the execution, extermination type stuff that you see, you know, when you look at the movies where they're lining people up with their rifles and all that. That was those fellows. You know, it wasn't like the really solidly dedicated, like, I'm a Nazi, we got to purge the world of Jews type of people. It was your regular everyday people. And there were steps, like very clearly laid out steps that got them from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's a really interesting book. And what makes it so interesting is that for whatever reason, this Police Battalion 101, their documents were preserved. Like, they just got lost by the Nazis. So the Nazis didn't destroy all their documentation as the Third Reich was falling. So this one police battalion, we have all the evidence of what they did and all the kind of entries of their interviews and their journal entries of their entire progression from, I'm just a normal guy, I just want to get home. Look, my job is just to stand here and, like, be police in the place they already took over to, okay, now your job is to exterminate this entire number of people because they didn't, someone here committed an offense. So now you have to kill 10,000 of these people.
Yep.
Go.
Old people, young people, women, children, men, everything.
And what their justifications were is all listed out there in their testimonies. It's very interesting. Definitely worth a read.
Wow. Okay.
But it's dark, obviously.
Yes. Obviously, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Remember, we're knuckleheads too, so I think we're all waiting for the movie to come out.
Probably not a movie you want to see.
That's one of those, like, make you sick to read it. I couldn't imagine watching it.
Yeah.
That movie did come out, Jason. It's called Schindler's List.
Oh yeah, there right? you go.
Yeah. So it covers the very similar track. So it's.
Except it's about the guy who didn't cave, you know.
Yes.
And who
that's right. Yeah, Schindler was the opposite. You know? Schindler was trying to save the Jewish people.
You can see both sides of the story in that movie. You can see both sides of that story. I mean, if you needed to see the movie, if you wanted to actually watch that in the movie without actually coming out that movie, you know, traumatized. And Schindler's List was a traumatizing movie. Let's not. So how are you going to make it? It's kind of the best thing you can do in a movie form and tell that story. That way you also tell the both sides of the story. But you can't tell the good side of the story without telling the bad side of the story to contrast it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't understand what he did without understanding what he didn't do. And so that's why it has to tell both sides.
Indeed.
I like it.
Great film.
I haven't seen that one either.
You haven't
seen I do not watch movies.
Oh man,
it's a rough watch. It's a very rough watch, and I couldn't watch it. I couldn't watch it now. I'm a different person now than I was then. I can't watch The Godfather now. There's kind of lots of violent movies I can't watch anymore. I'm too empathetic. I relate too much with what's on the screen. And so I can't watch them. So I'm kind of with you. I don't watch movies anymore. Watch Wreck-It Ralph. You know what
I mean? I actually watched that just the other day. Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph. Number one was definitely better than number two.
See, you're only tied into the movies that your kids force you to watch, it sounds like.
Actually, this one's a funny story. I was I took my parents to get a COVID test because they were going on a cruise vacation and they needed to go get a COVID test to do so. And the best place to do it was at my son's pediatrician. So I was watching this movie at the pediatrician while waiting for them to get their COVID test back.
So I guess they wouldn't show Schindler's List in that. I guess not.
Oh, I sure hope not. Dad, what
I thought
you
were
don't look,
head.
Son. Don't look.
Yeah. Oh. Close your eyes. Close your eyes.
Right. I tell you, though, one thing about Schindler's List, though, not that it would be appropriate for that setting, but well, one of the things, though, that's great about it, though, if you know, it's worth sitting through the you know, some of the tragedy that's happening is it's a real person. You know, you're literally seeing a study of a real person. It's not mm-hmm. fiction or anything else. And then you see at the end of the movie, all of the people whose lives he touched because they brought them all together for the end of the movie. And you see this crowd of people who were only there because of him. I mean, if he did not take a stand for lack of a better word, liberty, I guess, at the time, these people would have all been dead. And it's just, it was, and you see these generations of people. So, you know, them with their kids and, you know, none of them would have existed. So I thought it was a real powerful scene at the very end. But
Indeed. I agree with that, Jason. I really do. Yeah. I really do. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Well, so I guess if you're thinking, can one person make a difference? The answer is yes. One person.
Yeah.
What we need nowadays is people who stand by their principles to run for office, to put themselves in position. And even if they don't win in office, like look at Larry Sharp, the dude's making a difference, but it is a long shot for him to win his race. Yes. Always has been. And he's open about that. He knows that. And yet he is still out there for, what, 6 years now? Constantly campaigning to try to get the message out that, hey, liberty exists. There are people who want to stand for liberty above this party politic garbage we have going on. And we need more people like that who are going to stand up, who are going to say, look, I support liberty. I support the little guy. I don't support the machine that we've built up that helps only the elite. We need more of that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, one of the big concerns that I always have is that a lot of the people who run for office, they talk a really good game, and then they end up in Sacramento or they end up in Washington, in Washington, D.C., and they get taken over by the swamp, shall we say.
Yeah.
And they become, their principles are corrupted, and they become a part of the system.
Yep.
They become a cog in the wheel, and all their high talk of liberties and freedom seem to disappear. And you suddenly you can't even recognize the person that originally ran for office. And I'm always struck by that, and always dismayed by that. So yeah, I hope. Yeah.
Well, as someone who's run for office, I want to give up. I'm not defending any of these pinheads that are actually elected, but when you run for office and you take it seriously, your job is actually no longer to represent your perspective or your views. Your job is to represent everybody in your community.
Yeah.
And that means you have to make compromises. And the problem with politics today is our politicians don't explain that. They don't come out there. They're so afraid of not getting reelected that they're not willing to be honest. And so when they do compromise, we get people like Leon who's say, hey, what are you doing? You said one thing, but you're doing another thing. But they never said, well, yeah, but in order to get there, I'm going to have to compromise along my way for a long period of time to get us anywhere near what we want to go. And they're not willing to do that. They sit here and they pretend that they have these silver bullet solutions. Let me speak. Silver bullet solutions. And and they don't. But it gets them elected. So that's why they continue to say it.
But James, while I will accept the fact that the compromises are necessary for the functioning of government, especially one like what we have here, I agree it is necessary. But many of these things that these people, the freedom, liberty talkers in the political class, many of the things that they compromise on are totally against anything that we would ever stand for. I mean, there's a certain amount of compromise is necessary. I agree.
Leon, remember, I'm not defending any one of them because they violate their own ethics. There's a difference between compromise and violating your ethics, right? There's a vast difference.
I agree with that.
And if you don't explain it, then you're violating your ethics. If you don't come out there and you don't stand up in front of your constituency and say, hey, look, these are the compromises we're making. Here's why. And yes, I know you're going to be mad at me, and it's okay. They don't do that. And that's where our politics fails, because we don't expect that from them. We expect that they do exactly what they say. They expect that we expect that they don't compromise. And so we've ended up with this teamism. It's as much our responsibility as citizens as it is their, because we don't hold them accountable. But I'm not defending them, Leon. Trust me. I am not. Lord God, God knows. I am not defending these people. I ran against them for a reason, right?
You are certainly correct that we, the voting citizens, are responsible for the type of government we end up with. You are certainly correct about that. And one of the problems that we have here in our society, and I guess this might be a worldwide problem, is that we become quite complacent. So I accept your point.
You've just witnessed a knucklehead fight, by the way.
That's what happens with me and Leon. Me and Leon have very good disagreements. We have very good disagreements.
I thought that was very enlightening. I love watching people who can have disagreement. They can have disagreement civilly. They can find each other's good points in what the other person's saying, find points that they disagree with, and walk away just totally still on good terms. Exactly. Those are the type of conversations that we try to push here on this show. That's kind of our main shtick, is letting people have conversation again, getting people to talk about politics and religion again, but talk about them well.
You're a bigot.
What?
You're just a bigot.
I'm just a bigot. Yeah. And that was a perfect example of it. I thought that conversation was very enlightening. That James brought up a side that I had never really considered as much. I was very much with Leon, but I think, James, you articulated very well that our something that I was thinking right before you said it was that, yeah, our desire for them to do exactly what they say and without giving them any leeway to compromise with the other side is creating this monster of party politics in a way that I had never really considered. So that was that was a very good point. Thank you for that.
Indeed.
Well, you know, that's one of the things I think we're really missing nowadays, and it has to do with this intolerance as well, but is what you're saying, you know, the idea of having rich debate and discussion out there for the public to get their, you know, to get their points of view, because essentially people are just in these echo chambers right now. And if they are hearing a debate, it's a debate between, you know, essentially just the corruption, I guess, that's going on inside of each echo chamber, what level they're willing to tolerate, right? Where versus, you know, really hearing the best ideas from both sides. That's what we really want, because it's a, and there's so few forums like that. You know, you've got like Intelligence Squared US. They've got a forum for that. And there's the Soho Forum through Reason that does that now as well. But there's just so few of these things out there. And if we're going to be a better public as far as the way we consume our democracy and our you know, exercise our government, we've got to have more of this, because it's the only way we're ever going to make any sense of all of it.
Don't forget some of our guests like Braver Angels, who do the same thing. They go through and teach people how to have conversations. And so there are a lot of people who are doing this. It's just we don't know about them. We don't hear about them.
The larger problem is here, though, is that free speech is under attack, serious attack, especially on the college campuses.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people like Ben Shapiro have to gap security to go give a speech on a college campus these days. Free speech is under attack. This is a major, major problem in our society today, that if you open your mouth and you say anything that is different from the narrative, you are a bigot, you are a sellout. Well, oh God, that's very common to tell me because of the color of my skin. Oh, you are a sellout, you're transphobic, you're sexist, you're racist, and on it goes. They shut down debate. Debate is being shut down through name calling. That's all it is. True name calling. Everybody, they want to frighten everybody into silence.
I can tell that Leon. I can tell you're a white supremacist.
But I'm sure. It was the color of the skin that gave it away. I'm sure.
What did they call Larry Elder? The black face of white supremacy.
Exactly. Yes. Imagine that.
Yeah. Unbelievable. There's a. Well, what I kind of see it as is, the politics has devolved to people trying to take the ring, the Lord of the Rings ring. And I'm going to call that ring right now calling the other side evil. It's a very powerful tool. Yes. If you can label the other side as evil, it makes you look good and makes everyone disregard what the other side is saying. It's a very, very powerful tool. The problem is, the more you use that tool, the more you devolve into something that looks like Gollum. It's not good. It creates this evil inside you. It doesn't create good politics. It doesn't create a good government. Sure, it's good for you in the short term, but man, it destroys us all in the long term.
Indeed.
You know, there is one thing, though, that just a little bit of pushback on that, because, like, I completely agree with you. If you're talking left and right, then, yeah, this is exactly what's happening. But, you know, for the liberty-minded folks, they just want to be left alone, right? Yeah. And, I mean, that where is the other side to that, right? I mean, it seems like if somebody is literally going to come and force you to do something that you don't want to do, like force you into a war, force you to pay for something that you find reprehensible, it's like, where's the other side to that? I mean, how do you compromise on that? Oh, well, I'll just let you take half of what you said you're going to steal from me, right? Yeah. That's the compromise. I don't know.
I think I agree with you on that. If we're looking at the political compass from a left-right, which is kind of your Democrat, Republican, generally on your social and economic side, but then the other side of the compass is the North and South, with the libertarian on the bottom and the authoritarian on top. I think it's pretty easy to say, just from what has happened throughout history, whenever anyone starts to move too far up and then get power, they inevitably start killing mass numbers of people. Authoritarianism doesn't work for the people at large. It works for a few. Libertarianism does work. Generally speaking, for the people at large, even if in some cases you get less how would I put this, peak wealth in the hands of the few.
Yes.
But I think I agree with you there. If we're talking left and right, what I said is applicable. If we're talking up and down on the authoritarian libertarian scale, I'm going to say, yeah, getting too authoritarian just by nature of how many people it kills when you get authoritarian is pretty evil.
You know, but Jason, you know, you said that, you know, the for the liberty-minded is that we just want to be left alone. But, you know, even that now is becoming difficult, okay? Look at this issue, this this transgender issue where they, with these pronouns. They're not saying that they want to be recognized when they want their pronouns for themselves. They're not saying that. They are saying they want their pronouns to be used as they have prescribed it, and then they want you to use the correct pronoun, otherwise you're transphobic, okay? So it's not only, they're not telling us that we can be left alone, you know, we are good libertarians, or we smaller libertarians, that is, we want to be left alone, we want to be able to free to do as we please. They are telling us that you can do as free, you can do as you please, as long as you do what I say you should do.
Sure. But that's the point, I guess, is that we're talking that there is no compromise here, right? I mean, you know, it's not like you can sit there if you're the authoritarian and say, okay, you have to call me a Z. And I say, well, look, I just don't want to have any conversation here. I don't want to be a part of this. And so the compromise isn't, okay, we're going to find a word between Z and no word at all.
Yeah, well,
you know, I mean,
I guess what I was trying to get at is when they start calling you evil for not wanting to, I guess the way I kind of see it is they probably have somewhat of a savior complex where they have to protect the oppressed party. And the oppressed party in their eyes, if we're talking about the transgender situation, is the transgender people.
Yes.
And we have to protect them. They are unable to protect themselves. They are too oppressed. So we are going to protect them. We're going to be their saviors. And they end up with that situation where it makes them feel real good when they stand up for these people. In fact, I was having a conversation with someone on Facebook about this. Just
great place for a conversation.
Great place. Let me tell you, it went great. It went great to the point that someone goes, may I just invite you to talk to someone who's transgender? And I was like, you're kidding me, right? I talk to people who are transgender and interact with them constantly. This is very common for me. I have relatives who are transgender, and I interact with them, and it's fine. I have no problem. Yeah. I have had friends who were transgender far before this became the fad. I'm not new to this conversation. Welcome to the conversation. Thank you. It's not new to me. Now, thanks for putting that out there, but you got to understand, someone has another opinion.
Yeah,
and that's okay. Exactly. I can still talk to those transgender people. I don't have to stand there and say, I need to protect them from you who disagrees. It's like, what do you mean? I'm not doing anything to them. I'm saying, you know, I don't want to say this new pronoun. Look, between you and me, I'll use your pronoun when it's just us. But I'm not going to use it publicly because it's weird. It's new to culture. It's different. I'm not sure I'm on board with it yet, but out of respect for you, when it's just you and me, sure, I'll use it. That's fine. And you end up with this situation where people have taken this extreme to where you are evil because you're not using this in public. It's like, I'm sorry.
Yours is the compromise, right? I'll use it. You can ask. And if I have a relationship with you, I can make a decision to use it or not. And, you know, but in public, or you can't force me to say it in public or in private.
Yeah.
But you can ask. And we have a human right to decide what our relationship is after that, you know, whether we decide to use it or not, and whether we have a continued relationship, you know, business or personal relationship after that. That's the actual compromise, rather than one or the other. You don't get to use what pronouns you want, or you have to say what pronouns I want you to say. The compromise is we get to ask.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with that.
I think what most people have lost, and you know, it's indicative of the left losing their value on free speech, but it's the idea that a conversation is a voluntary interaction between two people. And the idea that this has become something where you have to, well, one side can literally cram down all kinds of constraints on the other side to the point of illegality in some places, you know, where they can jail you for a joke or something else like that. It's just, it's crazy. I mean, this is absolute authoritarian and controlling of ideas. It's, you know, in the end, this is a voluntary interaction where we come to an agreement upon which words we use, or we just simply don't have the conversation. I mean, that's the alternative, which is fine too. You know, if somebody has just horrific ideas, then they're free to have those as long as they're not hurting somebody, and you just exactly. go off and have your terrible ideas somewhere else. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, we seem to have started on this journey where there's some authoritarian figure out there, or the left, or whoever it is you want to point to. We have started on a journey where the end place of that journey is a place where someone will be telling us what to say, what to think, and what to believe. This is dangerous stuff we're talking about here.
Yeah. It's a sign of devolution of culture. We've got, and I'm not coming out saying that transgenderism is inherently evil. I that's not what I'm saying. But when you have a culture where everyone is forced to do what one side's opinion is,
yes.
at risk of public humiliation, at risk of canceling, losing your job in some cases we're seeing around yes. the country. This is a sign that your culture is falling apart.
Yeah. The transgender issue is just the issue that happens to be yes. the current bubbling up. It's not actually a fundamental problem. The fundamental problem is a culture that has decided we can destroy you if we don't like what you say this particular right. time. And if you happen to have said something that we don't like now that you said 10 years ago, we can also still destroy you because, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Well, and quite frankly, I think where this is all coming from and why it's gotten so bad now is, and this is sort of a knucklehead soapbox moment here, but this is essentially the size and scope of government, right? It has gotten so big that there's so much at stake that people just, you know, you have to win. You know, you can't afford to let the other side win, because then you lose everything, essentially. You know, all of the and we're kind of seeing that right now, right? When Trump lost, look at the crazy stuff that sort of happened since Biden has taken office. The idea that suddenly all student loans are just canceled by edict, you know, not completely canceled, but to a large degree canceled. Mm-hmm. And just an amazing stretch of power that's just gone insane. I mean, look at our national debt. It's over $30 trillion. And I mean, most people can't even fathom that amount. And our debt to GDP ratio, we're at levels above the worst we've ever seen in our country, which is above the peak of World War II. And that was when we were literally in a struggle for the preservation of liberty in the world. So yeah. I just, and what are we doing now that we're getting into, we fought the flu. You
know? Yeah. I mean, Jason, I'd make an argument that we actually are in a struggle for liberty again. If you want to look at that you know, debt to GDP ratio as a sign of we're in a struggle for liberty, then we're in a struggle for liberty. It's not one we're used to.
It's a different sign, though, in the sense that the spending of the money is the sign that we're losing our liberty. Yeah. It's not the spending our money to preserve liberty.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it's still the same sign. We're still in that fight for, you know, whether we have liberty going forward or not is an open question.
Yes.
And so I think that's a sign for it.
On that note, I'm going to invite everyone, all the listeners that are hearing this, to go out, register to vote, get your friends, register them to vote. Everyone get out and put your vote in. When we say fight for liberty, it's especially in the context here, we don't want people to go out on the streets, guns loaded, despite my shirt here, right? We're not telling everyone to go guns loaded out into the street to fight. No, we're saying go get your friends, get them registered to vote. When voting day comes around, say, hey, let's all go together. Let's go vote.
Yes.
And put your opinion out there.
Yeah, maybe we should change that to work for liberty instead of fight for liberty.
Oh, he's wearing the wrong shirt.
So I looked for that shirt, but I couldn't find it today.
We actually have a shirt that says shirt stand up and fight, except the fight is scratched out and it says stand up and work.
Yeah.
Oh, where did you get that?
In the description below, you can go pick up that Yep. Remington said it on an episode, and we had some really good feedback on that, so we turned it into a shirt. And yeah, you can pick up that shirt in the description.
Go in the description below. You can go and buy that shirt, which I will do here.
And you can get one for all of your friends and family too. So there's a lot of options there.
There you go. Support the show.
Indeed.
So we are coming to the end of our time here, but I want to ask everybody one more super secret question, and then we'll hear where we can everybody can find you guys. So here's my last question, and this is, supposing that this is your last opportunity to give life advice, what is the life advice that you're going to give to us right here? And we'll just, I don't know, go one at a time here. I like it. I think that's all really great advice. So where can everybody find you? You guys are pretty cool knuckleheads. Where can people find you?
You can go to just go knuckleheadsofliberty.com. Don't be confused about the branding. I'm behind on fixing the website. So it still says Libertarian Counterpoint. It's we share a website and I haven't fixed it yet. So, but just go to knuckleheadsofliberty.com and all our contacts and everything's there.
Yeah, but you can find us on YouTube, on YouTube. Spotify, on I think Rumble.
We're on Rumble.
If you want to find us on YouTube, you have to put us in quotations. Otherwise, yeah. YouTube doesn't find us. We're shadow banned already. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. They don't like our point of views, I guess.
And by the way, there is one thing I wanted to add in real quick. One of the things we really try and do on the show, especially with guests, we like to interview people who are organizing for liberty. And so we're going to have you guys on the show as well in the future. So, look forward to that.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great show. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
I guess until next time,
stay dangerous.
And keep your conversations tactical.
And we will see you all next time.